Hello, all. Welcome to the next episode of Let's Talk KBG. This is where we explore topics related to living with KBG syndrome and, what its impact is into our lives and so that we can stay connected to each other. This podcast is produced by the KBG Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to supporting people with KBG and driving research and driving towards meaningful improvements in all of our lives and hopefully a cure. So today we're joined by Jason Colquitt, CEO and founder of Across Healthcare, the company that launched the Matrix platform. Many of you know that Matrix hosts the KBG Foundation Natural History Study, and we will talk about that shortly. But first, Jason, can you tell us about your background and what led you to this work?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me. This is exciting. I love getting to talk to people and probably ad nauseum a lot more than what we'll get to today. But my background and career professionally has been in writing software and software tools in the healthcare space for almost 25 years. So I started on the electronic medical records. So I was really involved on the providers. When you go to the doctor, they pull up the screens. I helped write a lot of those screens and things like them. Got very familiar with data that was on that side of the fence, I'll call it. Then I transitioned, I created this company Across Healthcare right at the end of that stint at that company in the electronic health record space. Then I got a job with a large pharmaceutical contract research organization and got to do some amazing stuff around the world. I got to work with lots of big pharma, biotech, running global registries, collecting data from all sorts of places, as well as I got to interact with some pretty prestigious rare disease groups like cystic fibrosis, Muscular Dystrophy Association, American Heart Association. So some really large groups that had a lot of funding that could afford to pay us to do lots of stuff on the tech side. So my heart broke because there were a lot of small rare disease organizations that couldn't afford a technology platform to do those type things of collecting data. And I know we're going to get into the details of why you want to do some of this stuff, but it just wasn't affordable. So one of my desires was when I left that organization and came back to the company I had founded, I wanted to build a platform specifically in the rare disease space. I felt like I was given a calling to facilitate that and a vision for that. So I sat down when I got back and wrote 10 pages of here's what I want this platform, this Matrix platform to be. I should also note personally, I have a mitochondrial rare disease, so I can relate to a lot of the groups and patients that I talk to. Mine was a 32-year diagnostic odyssey where I didn't know what I had. You know, they were just telling me, oh, you're just showing up at the ER, you know, drink more fluids, go home after I stay in the hospital for a few days, get, fluids through me and fleshed out. So, I can relate a lot on that side, not to the extent a lot of my groups do with the patients and the populations I deal with. But that professional and personal balance of where I am now is pretty awesome to see, as well as lots of my team have that same story of connection to the rare space. So that's kind of the high level backdrop of why I do what I do and how I got into this.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I knew a fair bit about your background from our conversations, but it's always amazing the journey that you go on, right? Of just kind of going through, like I always like talk about the holy mission. I don't know if that's a good phrase or not, but just how much help you can make in people's lives and just what brought you to, you know, where you're at. I think since this is the first podcast, I probably should introduce myself. I should have done that earlier, but I'm Glenn Mon. I'm the chairman of the KBG Foundation. I am blessed to be the father of a son with KBG. He's the light of my life, and every day I thank goodness that I get to be a part of his life. So my background is in technology and yeah, having lots of fun. So this really, you know, the Matrix platform and our use of it really has resonated with me, just from a guy who has a lot of data background and knows how important that is. You know, we always talk about data as being the gold of any organization. You know, that's your gold mine that you need to go and make sure that you have it in a state that it brings valuable insights. And so certainly in this case, what we'll talk about today is associated to that. Let's see here. Like I said, the journey that you talked about for me and my son was a lot of years, right? Just before you can figure out what's going on. And all of that time, you know, my wife and I were looking for resources that could help us figure things out and accelerate the curve of getting a diagnosis and figuring out what does it mean and how, you know, what is the prognosis for what, in this case, my son has. There was not a lot of information. There weren't any, since it's a rare disease, any groups that we could turn to. And most doctors kind of looked at us and went like, I don't know. And so it's always fun, or not fun, interesting that, you know, the journey we go on makes us stronger, but we always hope that we can use tools such as yours and our foundation to shorten the journey of, you know, something's going on to, oh, this is what it is. And this is how I help with that. So let's see. So maybe the next thing we should talk about is, and I've referenced it a couple times, is the, you know, the Matrix platform. And just maybe you could describe it and tell us a little bit about how a natural history study, like we launched over the summer with you guys, are helpful in terms of gathering data on a particular disease or disorder. And then what does that mean? So I'll throw it over to you.
Yep. So lots of different ways I could go. But when I first sat down, like I talked about earlier, I had run a lot of third-party software tools. So I knew what they did in the space. And most of them in the clinical research arena, when you start talking about natural history studies, they're pretty much bland. It's a survey system or a form system that I'm just going to collect your data. I'm going to collect it, you know, every six months, 3 months, pick your cadence and, you know, repeat, rinse and repeat. And one of the things I saw missing in that was the patient. And I talk a lot about this when I speak. I embodied this concept that cystic fibrosis actually embedded into my brain, called co-production of care. This is, I talk about research is historically right to left, meaning the researchers come up with their hypothesis, they determine the variables and endpoints they want to collect, then they go ask the population, and then, you know, the population answers and they get it. So it's the, if you're, the researchers are on the right, it's right, and then it goes back to the right. My whole hypothesis and how I wanted to build my system was this co-production, like everybody's contributing and everybody leads to insight around these diseases. So our system embodies that, in that we spent like the first year talking to patients and caregivers and saying, hey, if I could give you a tool, yeah, I know, and I'll get to it in a minute, why you a natural history study is important and what you want to do there. And my team comes from research, so we know like the things that we need to build into this platform to be ready for that and have this data be ready for submission to FDA or pick your regulator. But it was, what can I do for you as a family, you know, in more day to day versus the every 6 months or 3 months. So we really built a lot of tools around that of, hey, I'm managing a lot of medications. How can I track those medications? Can I get reminders off those medications? Hey, my child, this survey that I filled out for this other thing was asking me these four things, but my child is not sleeping at night. They're waking up in sweat, night sweats, you know, they're doing this or that no researcher is necessarily tracking, but I want a system where I can track it. And oh, by the way, parents and patients are very, They won't wait till somebody builds a system. A lot of them have paper notebooks that they're tracking this in, Excel spreadsheets. My VP of project management, with her child, she said, "You don't know how many spreadsheets I had trying to analyze all this stuff." So we really wanted to embody that piece of it and say, "All right, parents, patience, go ahead, knock yourself out, track all you want above and beyond what necessarily the researchers on that right side of the equation are asking." So we allow you to pull in your EHR data, electronic medical record data, if you're in the US, every 7 days, so that you can have that record coalesced. And we do something called that allows patients and caregivers to look at that, because I just had an incident the other day of Epic My Chart, love it to death, but the medication list, if you go on your portal, your My Chart, it may or may not be right. And we want the right medication list that you're on or your patient's on, right? So we allow you to mediate, we call it patient mediated data. Like, we pull in the EHR data, but oh yeah, by the way, you can say, nope, this is inaccurate. Oh, it doesn't have this med. So those are all the way to like just free text journaling. A lot of the moms said, and I don't know why I said moms, but moms tend to do this. My wife does it, like speech to text, right? I want to spit this narrative stuff that's happened to me. I want to just journal about it through the day when things happen, when a seizure happens or anything. So we allow for all those type things. And oh yeah, by the way, any of this data is always available for you to share to grandma, school nurse, anybody that you want to, you know, I got an appointment with a new specialist and I want to share all this data that I have within Matrix. We allow you to do that with a link and a PIN code. So again, back to that whole co-production of care, we believe everybody's contributing to it. And that was the whole thesis. And by the way, like I said, there is the historic, like, ask a specific set of questions over a series of time, because these natural history studies are very important. When anybody's looking for anything in your disease area, if they want to know, okay, what's the natural progression of the disease and what's happening with the kids or adults or whatever the population is. So they will be asking these questions and you need to have answers to quantify, you know, what's going on. So it's not just, I think this is happening. You can actually go to it and say, all right, here's what we're seeing. And here's what we've seen over the last, you know, 2 years, 1 year, you know, and the more data you got, the better. So that's kind of the basis. So I'll stop there. I could talk about a lot more, but really the thesis of Matrix is to allow that whole co-production of care ecosystem and allow the researchers to get this really rich data set that they can do research on and see what's happening. And then the patients and the caregivers on the other end of the spectrum, you know, just feeding data in as they see it and, you know, enriching what's there.
So, I mean, a lot of things that you just talked about resonate a lot as I've interacted with the Matrix platform, right? You know, you talk about the scientific method for people, right? You have, you know, the whole hypothesis and data collection and whatever else. And you talked about that flow. One of the things that impressed me that I recognized that I have a background in software development, in user experience, in what they call product, and also in the technology development side. And from my background, what I realize is that a lot of software and a lot of things are not written for the user. They're written either in the way the developer would see, or a way a product person might look at that world, but not necessarily really capture or encapsulate the experience of, like, does the user and you know, and these folks that are using your product, do they really is it really suit their purpose? And so for a long time, you know, my wife Annette and I really didn't have a place to put our data. You had medical records and everything else, but you really didn't have a place to put it together in a way that was kind of cohesive and could be shared in a way that was meaningful. So, you know, Annette was the master and is the master of, like, Excel spreadsheets and databases and things like that. And she was collecting all this data together in a way that could be used. So, you know, one of the things that the doctors always tell you when you have, like, someone who has epilepsy, like my son, you know, as part of his condition, was that, you know, he got to journal his seizures, you got to journal, you know, all these different things. And so it was always a challenge. And so with Matrix and the way that you guys have designed it, it's really, you know, user first and patient first. And in a lot of the ways that people can get data in there. And then it is very research friendly. It's the way that you can slice and dice stuff is awesome. So that you can, you know, do both sides of the things, that kind of linear research hypothesis, scientific method, and also about getting data in there that's meaningful to people and that they can check stuff. So yeah, I just wanted to reflect that, like, as part of our evaluation to use your product, I really in particular noticed that as part of something that stood out. So we looked at a lot of different things, we talked to a lot of different folks, and it wasn't always the case that that it was user first and you know, patient first. So yeah, my hat's off to you for the work that you've done. I know it's always a journey, and you're always continuing yes. on that journey. And it's I always say, like, it's not a road to a door; it's a road to the horizon of constantly yes. improving, yeah. listening to the people that are using your platform, and making sure that it evolves and that your passion and vision actually is valuable in who's going to use it and that it reflects. And so, yeah, you're constant seeking feedback, not in an annoying way, but in a, you know, like, hey, tell us what we can do better. I've heard that in so many conversations with you and from other folks of, you know, this is something we should tell them. This is something we should share so that, and we know that you listen. So I appreciate that. And thank you. Let's see. So when we looked at, you know, when we launched our natural history study over the summer, maybe go into a little more about why the natural history study, just as that kind of a phrase and that thing, is really important, right? Your platform and Matrix does a great job of bringing that together. But maybe talk a little more about, you know, what is a natural history study?
Okay.
And then we can go more into, you know, just some of the other, you know, examples of it. So.
Yeah. And you'll hear, it's not just me saying these things, but you'll hear, if you go listen to FDA, if you listen to NIH, I was just in San Diego with the FDA, they will hit on these. You need to, if you're a rare disease advocacy group, you need to be established in these, if they don't already exist, these natural history studies, because these are hugely important. Like I said earlier, to boil it down, they want to know the natural progression of that disease. So you have to be smart enough to know, what are the data points that I want to capture? Like, you'll hear them refer to them as variables. So what are the variables I want to capture? So there's a lot of standard instruments that you can use, meaning standard surveys or forms that you can use. And we really push a lot of those, push them onto our group. Sounds bad, but we want to, you know, standardize what everybody's collecting, because there is a lot of interesting, because we do service so many groups. I mean, we're up to almost 100 advocacy groups, and we're a lot of them are in the epilepsy neurodevelopmental space. So it's kind of cool to see common trends among them. And unless you're using those standard instruments, and then also when you get to FDA side of the equation, they will be looking for standard instruments that you've used. So it's hugely important when you're looking at, I'm going to build this, you know, database of all these things that are happening with all the kids and all the patients around the world. How do I track all that? That there are some of these standard instruments to be used. And that's a lot of times what you see in these natural history studies is, and like I said, it's just a recurrence of those items over time to see how are they trending, you know, walk, seizures, all of those things. We call it a head-to-toe survey to start off with. Within our tool, we use a lot of branching logic. So you as a parent don't have to answer a lot of questions, or, you know, as a patient answering this, you don't have to answer a lot of questions that you don't need to. So you say, I have problems with my eyes, I have problems with my heart. And then that leads to, in these standard instruments, much more detailed and fidelity that you're going to ask around those areas. And we can watch that, again, natural progression of that. We work a lot with just if you can walk, how that goes down over time. Speech is another one. Like you watch that digress over time in a lot of the diseases that we deal with. So you're wanting to see, and the whole purpose of it is you've created this baseline so that now if you introduce any therapy or any treatments into that equation, you can say, hey, look how we've deviated from the standard or what normally happens. And jump to the punchline. I mean, if we could do this, this will be awesome. But I don't know how many people know how clinical trials actually work. So if you get blessed with a therapy in your disease, you want to see how many patients you have that all can come out of that natural history study. You're wanting to bend that curve, right? Of, you know, we had this many seizures. We want to go to less seizures. We had this, you know, digression in walking. We want to bend that curve. So we can build that the natural history can actually be an arm of the trial rather than putting people on placebo. This has only happened in a few cases that we know of to date, but the desire is, and my dad was on a drug that we didn't know if placebo or not. So that's hugely important to understand. Like, it's heart-wrenching to know my child could have been on the drug or could have been on a placebo. And in a lot of our diseases, like that time that they are on drug is hugely important for they're going to digress, right? So if we can build this natural history, have that control arm that we don't have to do placebo, that's a really cool thing in the end of this and why you want to do some of these things. It's not always the case though, you can do that because some of the things and endpoints you want to prove in the study, you don't have in your natural history and you didn't plan for them. I mean, you can plan all day long and you might not hit all of them. So you might still have to have that control arm as part of your study, but that's another reason you want to do these natural history studies. But again, natural progression, to just hit the highlights that I just said, natural history, we're wanting to see the natural progression of the disease over time and then build that baseline of what's happening with the disease over time.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit on some things that really resonate there. So like, yeah, the natural history study, sometimes you think about data in terms of a single point in time. And really what's really important, like you hit on, is just that you see the evolution or the change over time. And so oftentimes, you know, it's like they say, what is it? GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. If you get good data in and you think about how to standardize it and how to structure it up front, it's really important to how you're able to leverage it. Like you just talked about the placebo trials, right? One of the things that's always heart-wrenching for me to look at is when you do have to have some of these extended placebo trials and you know that half of the folks are not getting a chance at the real deal. And so you really want to minimize that. And like you said, having this good data, having it in a standardized or at least as standardized as you can, and really think about as many of the edge cases you can, but yet have relevant data is like the secret sauce. And one of those things that you talked about is kind of this curation of the data collection and the standardization so that, you know, anybody who's gone to fill out, you know, government forms or anything like that, they oftentimes ask you the same question five different times. And you're like, oh, I need to skip to section 14A. What the heck? None of these questions are important. And so a lot of the standardization in this curation that your product helps with really helps get this data collection and these history studies in a state that they are, you know, more, what is that phrase? Shovel ready for, you know, you're going into these trials and going into, you know, meaningful therapies. And so, yeah, for us, we really realized, you know, how important it is for folks with KBG that anything that we can do to give a leg up and anything that we can do to help with the discovery process and, you know, drive towards that innovation cycle that we all want of like, how do we get these meaningful therapies in the hands of people that make a difference in their lives? And this is one of those things that really stands out. So Yeah, I have a lot of respect for the work that you're doing, obviously, and maybe I'm sounding like a big fanboy, but in a lot of ways I am. So
teamwork, it takes everybody. So I always talk about, like, I brought to the equation, and I mean, you do with your background, there needs to be technology people. I'm bringing the technology piece, but it takes a lot people smarter than I on the statistical analysis side and the, you know, just the parent side of understanding the disease every day. You know, I'm living with the child. So it's a team effort, but I mean, when you think about it, it seems really easy, but there's a lot of complexity in it. So as much as I can provide to ease that, because you can throw acronyms and all kind of stuff out. But I mean, when you boil it down, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get this clean data that shows everybody that we've collected it, this is what it is, and then hopefully introduce these therapies, right? And then we can prove to the regulators that that's improving. So you got to track them with the data and then prove to them with the data what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I always think that, like, it's really whenever you have data and or you have information, it's really easy to introduce what you call noise. Right. They seem like patterns, or they seem like it's meaningful data. And oftentimes that noise of not collecting the data or being or doing a good job with your normalization, you know, making it so you can standardize it and stuff. If you don't do a good job with that, you can actually slow yourself down. And because now it's like, well, is the data set good? Well, you know, these questions start coming up, and then pretty soon there's a distraction to, like, no, we have a good data set. Now let's apply that data set or that data. So anyway, it's always interesting when we think about we don't want just data, but we want to have good, meaningful data that's clean enough for people to work with. And that's the sauce, right?
And I'll pivot a little bit and not in line with the question, but the other thing to think about when you're doing this is globalization. So that was in our front of our mind from the beginning, because a lot of these populations, I'm sure KBG, like everybody who's not English and lives in the US to ask KBG from them, right? So you have to be thinking about that, of how do I make it multilingual? How do I get it to the rest of the world and be compliant with all their regulations? So that's another thing the matrix brings to the table, of we're collecting data from 127 countries. We have translated currently into nine. We're just adding Chinese, which will be the ninth language we add, but those are coming. And you got to understand too, our platform, I mean, I am a for-profit company, but this is a very philanthropic mindset that I have, in that I want everybody to have a platform like this, and I don't want cost or anything to be an equation. So a lot of our groups, like Chinese, actually came. There's a group that funded it. So it's a lot of, you know, everybody sharing, you know, rises everybody right up. So yep. That's another thing we truly believe. You know, KBG's in here, they're feeding, you talked about the feedback loop, right? You're feeding back information. That's the same as this other group. So let's build that. And then it helps everybody. So that's another big thing that I feel is a differentiator of how we do business versus everybody else. There's over 10,000 rare diseases, and you know, we need to get in, I forgot what the number is, like only 1,000 or so have these registries or natural history studies in play. So how do we expand and get that? So it's all about how can we all contribute to make it good for everybody. And then it makes KBG better, because we've got a more collective, group of people that are focused on this.
Well, and this was one of the really important things, localization, right? Or bringing things into terms of regional languages, like you said, Spanish, German, whatever, was one of the things that was important to us, because when you are in the rare disease community, you're not dealing with huge populations, right? Mm-hmm. So we have the population we have in the United States, you know, that's where I'm from. But we also have communities all over the world. And if you don't have the capability to have localization of languages and input, then you're missing a lot, because, you know, if you only have 100 people worldwide and only 20 in the US or whatever it is, you know, then you're missing a lot of the capability to really accelerate and help each other. And so localization and globalization, I mean, obviously the KBG Foundation is international in its nature. And so we have folks from all over the world that we work with. And it was one of the things that we looked at was that, you know, when software developers, this is going back to my roots, when software developers are writing software, they always think about their language. They always think about, like, I'm in the US, this is an English thing. And then somewhere down the point where you're getting closer to launch and you're thinking about, like, how do I expand this thing? You're like, oh yeah, localization, which is the term for it, right? Localization, I need to, what about Spanish? Did we think about Spanish? And then there's this whole effort that you have to go back and retrofit and everything else. And so it was important for us to know that we weren't going to a platform that had to retrofit or did it as a secondary thing. And so, yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was a very important thing for us. And it is a very important thing for us to be able to do that. So,
well, you can geek out for just a minute, because we actually missed a little bit. We didn't realize how difficult right to left languages. So when we started doing Hebrew and some of these languages, we were like, oh yeah, we can move. We can flip the languages, but like the whole screen has to flip. So their scroll goes right to left, right, uh-huh. Everything. So it's not just the language bit. It's the whole nuances of the screens too. So we have accomplished that now, but that was one of the things we missed early on, but we're there now.
It's like everybody thinks I'm just going to get Google Translate and I'll just change all the labels.
Right. No. I mean, even down to the OK cancel buttons. I mean, in the U.S., we're used to OK being on the left, cancel on the right. Right. They're the opposite. So it was kind of.
Yeah, it's pretty far ranging user experience, like you said. And yep. It doesn't mean that you build it once and everybody can use it. But if you don't build it right, those are very, very painful to refit. And oftentimes people are waiting years for localization in their software.
And we've actually done studies to look at this. So when we launch a language, you can actually watch an uptick in certain countries because of that. So this isn't like Glenn and Jason sitting on here saying this is a good thing to do. Like, we have data from our other groups that we've shown where when we added Portuguese, we got Brazil, you know, we started seeing patients pop up. So, you know, that is a barrier. I mean, a lot of people do speak English as a second language and can stumble through it. But when you give them their native language and an experience that they're comfortable with, you're going to get a lot better participation.
Yeah. My background, I at one point in time worked for Adobe, and you can imagine Adobe software worldwide, lots of different users and localization and stuff like that. And it was amazing when we looked at just usage of software, when we had more of an, you know, like just a translation experience where we just relabeled stuff versus like how when we reworked the UI or had a dynamic UI that we could customize to people's usage, there was a huge difference. Like there was like, yeah, I think it was like 20 to 30% uptick in usage in some of those regions that you could look at and you could see, just like you were reflecting.
Yeah.
So that's definitely rings true.
Well, no, and I'm stumbling all over and you got other questions to go to, but another nuance to say, everything that we do is certified translations. So once you get into research and you're providing, you know, patient consents that the patient's going to, you got to make sure they understand what's going on. You know, you have all this other, you know, clinical language, you got to verify that that's accurate in the context of everything. So even though, again, we're saying this and people think Google Translate, it can't be like that. And again, the regulator is going to ask, how did you certify that translation? So we use certified translation companies that provide us those translations. It's not like a Google Translate. It has to go out, get qualified or certified and translated and then validated that's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to, like I said, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And if you're not, I mean, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because oftentimes people don't think about that, you know, different languages have different nuances to them. And when you think you're asking someone the same thing, it turns out that nuance can throw you off, especially when you're trying to have accuracy in your data. So yeah,
yep.
No, that's a great point. That's awesome that you're doing that though. That shows the maturity of making sure you got good data and that your collection mechanisms are clean. So let's see. Do you have some examples of and other organizations who have adopted the Matrix platform and how it's helping them gather information in a similar way to KBG Foundation. I mean, we're on a journey, and you have like some like the road ahead stories for other organizations. Yeah.
So definitely a lot of our groups are using it to go solicit biotech pharma for therapies. They're going with them with hard numbers of here's what they're using our data for grants. So that's a, you know, funding mechanism to get more money flowing into the organization to get, you know, research dollars, not just around what we're doing, but other dollars in. So mm-hmm. we definitely see that as you amp up a lot of our groups are partnering with academic groups around the world. I mean, we got one in Australia that's just kicking off a study, and they're using our data for as a part of their research. They're doing other things on top of it, but that's a cool thing to see that, hey, they got some hypothesis on this. They're using our data as baseline data for the patients. And again, you probably know, like, every researcher wants to ask the same thing of all the parents every time you go see them. So right. anything we can say, hey, use Matrix as the baseline for all these questions that we already know, so you don't have to ask them that again. And then on top of it, you can ask, you know, whatever you want to ask specific to your study or whatever. So we see a lot of academic type studies going on across our groups. So that's another cool thing to see. And then we have biotech and pharma that are running sub registries or sub studies within our platform. So, you know, with the KBG natural history study, we got a certain set of questionnaires and you know, variables that we're collecting on patients. But then if you get a biotech interested with that hook of here's the data, here's the population, maybe they want to do something deeper or you know, so we can actually add their questionnaires inside of yours. So we do that with a lot of groups as well, all the way to in some diseases, there's already therapies or drugs being given, and you can see what's the safety or post-market effects of some of those therapies. So you can add those type studies into this of saying, all right, the kids that are on this medication, here's how they're doing over time. And we create specific surveys and data to capture that. And I mean, I focus a lot on the patient caregiver side of this, but it's also interesting to note that we didn't just do it for that. Again, co-production of care, clinicians, your clinician that you go see, or they'll call them an investigator at the site that may be running a trial, Matrix has the ability to invite them onto platform and have them fill out surveys or forms as well. They call them case report forms, CRFs. So you can add that. So if a pharma biotech wants to add that into the equation of when you go to your next visit, you know, they have every visit you ask this set of questions or collect this data, you can facilitate that. We're also, and I'm just throwing things out randomly, we also have biospecimen studies that are running. So obviously we don't store, you know, we don't have a biorepository ourselves in Matrix, but we link out. So we have groups that partner in that regard where you're consenting and you're collecting any metadata that biorepository needs in Matrix. And then we have a link. So if a researcher wants, hey, I'm interested in this patient population, and then we got blood, you know, at this, you know, biorepository that we can use, and they can do whatever they do. I don't pretend to be the clinician or scientist to create your cell lines or whatever you want off of those specimens. So we're doing a lot of that as well. That's really big right now. I'll probably pause there. Well, let me say one more thing. We're also doing a lot of studies. We spent a lot of time last year investing in sensor data. KBG, you guys haven't executed on devices, but that's another interesting movement, sleep. We're even doing, like, I don't know that you guys are affected with sugar levels, but like Dexcom, continuous glucose monitors, flowing data in. So it's just not you as a parent, you know, typing information in. A lot, the sensor and device area has gotten more mature. I don't want to say it's all the way there because it can't do everything, but there's a lot of data from interesting from these devices that we're connecting in to make that, again, that data set more robust that we have on the patient population. I'll pause there. I said a lot. in a little bit. So.
No, I mean, this was that was exactly where I was going. It gave me a great overview of that stuff, the instrumentation and streaming data, or just, you know, data in general from devices is something that will be a gold mine as we get better and better at having devices that meaningfully collect data. You know, like you talked about, the glucose monitoring is obviously something that's important that has really come forward in its technological innovation. But lots of devices now are smart devices, and that streaming data, you know, is even easier for people to get in there. You know, for us, you know, with Matrix being, you know, the tool to help us like gather all of this stuff together in a way that wasn't so dispersed, right? So you can think about the Dexcom stuff or whatever else. If you have all these disparate data sources, it's really hard for researchers and for folks to bring that together in a way that you can get a view that's really meaningful. And in rare disease, it's even more important that we pull this together, because the overhead, the lower we can, or the easier that we can make that hump to get over to work on something that's really meaningful to us, the better. And so really with Matrix, just bringing that data together into a pool has been really one of those things that, you know, whenever we talk to folks, are like, oh, you really have your data together. It's not in three places. You really have it in a place where we can go look at it. And that your collection is really being robust in the way that what you can bring in from everything from parents to, you know, medical to, like you said, now other devices. That is a really really helpful, and I like the idea that people are able to. You brought it up earlier, and just wanted to hit it again. Is that people are able to with this to really help them manage and track their own health. So it's not just I'm feeding it into this system and it goes out someplace into the ether, and what does it really mean? You now also have that record associated to data that's in there that is meaningful and available. And that's even better because, you know, oftentimes it's not in this, just in a research setting, but, you know, in your patient care, you know, clinician, whatever, you're going to get asked questions and you're like, do I recall this in an accurate way? Is this really? And so I can't tell you how many times we go to, you know, something for our son, Glenn, and we get asked questions. And even with how well we know him and what his history is and everything else, having the ability to go back and reference and be able to, you know, follow up and say, you know, you asked me this question and I said X, but this is really what, when I looked, this is really what I found. Because I found that, you know, the human brain is great for lots of data, but it is not always, it's not designed for 100% accuracy. And so when you have that reference and it's meaningful to you as a patient or someone who's living with a rare disease, that's important. Let's see here.
Two things there. So we allow patients to, we call it insights. So you can correlate. So you pick certain data points that you want to trend and see them on a grid. And you can say, is there any correlation? Because we see a lot of, I want to pull my meds on, I want to pull seizure activity. We even had a parent that was, they were tracking, we weren't pulling, I wish I had a way to pull this in. They were at atmospheric pressure and they were seeing trends of seizure activity when, and I think that's a known thing, researchers have looked into that, but they were actually tracking it. So again, we allow for you to trend this stuff and look at it. Like you said, you may think things are the way they are, but like when you look back at the data, it may be different, or you might see things that you didn't expect. So that's one thing. And we allow patients and caregivers to have that, as well as the clinician side of that equation. The other thing that's cool is ability, once you answer some of these surveys and collect these variables, a parent can go in and say, okay, I answered this across the population. How many people answered the same way I did? So you can kind of see, all right, the first one was I'm focused on myself and how I'm trending in correlations. The next is, all right, at the population level, you know, I'm seeing this. Am I just a small minority, or are we the majority of what's going on with the disease progression or whatever else you're looking at? So that's pretty cool.
It's awesome. Like for us, my son has an autoimmune component. And for a lot of years, you know, doctors would kind of dismiss like some of our questions of like when he gets sick or when he's getting better, you know, when he has a fever. And so this you know, data helped us look for those trends too, of like, you know, like you said, there's, you know, maybe air pressure or maybe people are sensitive to certain things. For us, the autoimmune stuff of keeping track of illness helped us improve our son's quality of life, because, you know, I'm a data guy, and I'm a scientist by background. And so I want to deal with science. I want to deal with facts. And even, like I said, in our brain, even my scientific brain, it's really easy to have anecdotal type of things of like, oh yeah, I noticed. But when you can tie it back and you can see those trends, I mean, not only for you know, people who are you know, clinicians or working on some of these things, but for parents to be able to go, yeah, here's something that I should be aware of. And for us, you know, things like tethered cord in our population was one of those things that kind of was hidden from a lot of folks and really didn't come forward. And the journey that we had with our son and being able to share that with the community, I believe is very meaningful, but a lot of doctors didn't really realize the impact that that could have on our population. And so it was easy for them to say, well, you know, yeah, but, and so anyway, I keep talking about myself, so I apologize. I want to
all good stuff. Yep.
Let's see what else. So we talked about a lot of things, and you hinted towards a lot of pieces that you're working on. What are, you know, the what's next for Across Healthcare? What is this vision of the future? You talked about some of those things that you have out there and that you're constantly working on, but tell me a little bit about the vision. Tell me a little bit about where does this go?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm trying to scale this as fast as possible. So I talked about the 10,000 rare diseases, and I feel a huge burden that like there's not enough people on the technology side that can scale that. I mean, we've seen the loss of several technology platforms over the last 12 months that went out of business or bankrupt. So more, you know, and that's, I guess, good for me because there's more potential for me to move in, but it's very sad that we, you know, the community doesn't have that. So how fast can I scale to help all of these rare diseases out there? That's a big push for me, all the while trying to increase the features and functions. So we're constantly adding, like we're about to add family. I mean, I've got a list, you know, 10 years long of things, some of the near term things like family ID. So we've always had like caregiver to patient, but some of these diseases go well beyond that, where you want to pull in aunt, uncle, cousin, and be able to tie this whole family tree of things going on. So we're about to introduce that, those kind of aspects. So it's a constant. I mean, you heard me talk about the sensor device. So we see like the panel I was on in San Diego was really focused with the FDA of, they call them digital health tools, DHTs. So they are gung-ho about how do we start introducing these and how do we get them more, you know, in clinical trials and be useful endpoints for these trials versus the way we've always done it. They also talk, you know, this is another piece, how can Matrix help in this regard of decentralized trials? So they talk about, you know, I may have to fly to Boston or, you know, Colorado to be in this trial. How can you do as much as you can at home? So if we can send you devices or ways to do things and collect and observe that are standard, you know, that's a huge piece of the equation of how do we, you know, get that. I'll definitely hit on the buzzword that everybody talks about is AI, machine learning, artificial intelligence. So that's amazing to watch. There's a lot of, you have to have the right use case to apply that to, and we're not really using a lot of that. My big thesis was I need to collect this data, standard data, as fast as I can. I think you're going to see a flip of how we can use AI across some of the data sets that we have, because it's really like, outside of my own session in San Diego, that's what I attended, all the AI sessions, to just hear what people are doing and how they're using that. Because you talked about the brain and our ability, you know, how that these machines can parallel process all this and see things and trends and work in parallel that we couldn't do. They talked about, you know, working on these genomic projects that people in their processing would have taken, you know, 100 years, and they did it in a day with a machine. So there's obviously a lot of applicability to some of that on what we're doing on a small scale. So we're definitely looking at that and where we can grow into to leveraging some of that. I mean, we actually use it to write our code. So disclaimer behind the scenes, it's very nice to be able to say, hey, everybody's used ChatGPT probably by now. You know, give me a function that can do this, and ChatGPT can crank that out. So we're definitely using AI, but not to the extent I think we can in the years to come.
Yeah, I mean, my background is really in technology, being a chief technology officer and things like that, and leading engineering and product teams. And it's funny, the promise of AI, I was wondering if you were going to bring it up. If not, I was going to ask you about it, because I know you're working on some stuff. It's always interesting, the promise of AI, but it's important to have something meaningful that you're working on with it, right? It's not, you know, sometimes people think it's magic, and it's amazing, because if you have a person trying to do all this stuff and go through these complex processes, it's oftentimes really hard to do that in a short enough period of time. And then also the human frailty comes into it, where you don't necessarily have that. You just have to have the model frailty of making sure that you built a good model, and that that the way that you're collecting your data is good. But one of the biggest questions that I always get is, like, you know, my, you know, CEO, my whatever came to me and said, what are we going to do with AI? We got to do something. I'm hearing everybody's working on it. And my answer always is, make sure you're focusing on meaningful things.
Yep.
That you're trying to elevate the people who are working on it from being people who are just, you know, shuffling data or the mechanics of data into being able to have insights into the data. And so there's projects where people were doing things that were taking hundreds and hundreds of hours, you know, and especially when you think about in some of the settings that, you know, in the medical field of people being doing redundant things, and taking those things and bringing AI automation to them, so that now you're going towards the meat and potatoes with people's brains, and not just, you know, a hands on a keyboard type of thing. And so, yeah, so I'm definitely interested about the future, but it's always interesting to talk to people. One of the insights that I always gained is that AI is just probability. Whenever you ask me a question, I'm going to think about, like, is it going to rain tomorrow? In my brain, I'm doing a probability calculation of, like, I heard on the news, maybe it's going to be good tomorrow, and I'll give you an answer based on that. So we're very probability answering. But the same thing about AI is that you cannot be 100% accurate in most cases with AI. It's just trying to get close enough that your prediction, the prediction of what the model is helpful. Absolutely. Enough about AI. I could geek out all day.
Yep.
But I am glad that you're leveraging that, because a lot of what you are and what we face in the area for what Matrix does and what you guys are working on is there is a lot of redundancy and a lot of repetitive stuff. And you've already reduced a lot by your intelligent design, so you're not asking people 400 times the same question. But then taking that and continuing to expand and leverage it, I mean, it's a timely thing for all of us. So looking forward to that and the evolution. I'm always glad to chat and give you my two cents if it's valuable. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I know that we probably are using most of the time we booked today, but let's see. I mean, just
one thing you said about I just want anybody listening to understand it's not a common thing that you can access your own data. I mean, I know as a patient, but even as a KBG Foundation, and our thesis is patients own their data. They should have access to their own data anytime, anywhere they want it, right? And we make an attempt to make that as useful as possible. Then above that, we see you guys, KBG Foundation, as the stewards. And through that patient consent you guys have on there, the patients are saying, okay, KBG Foundation, we want you to do good with the community data, and the patients are allowing that. But you, I think for everybody listening, that's not a common thing. Typically, academics or other systems like ours will consider that IP, and they want to lock that down so that somebody else can't have that. And they kind of, I think some of them have good intentions, but you just don't realize how that's not the common trend in this space. It's collect the data for your own purpose and your own study, and then you want to publish, be the first to publish, and you don't want everybody else to have it. Whereas we're talking about a totally flipped of, open science, open source kind of stuff. That's the model we're using. If this belongs to patients first, and we want to open this up. So I just want to hit that point as I was thinking about something you said earlier, that's not the common trend. So that's an important piece to this.
It's extremely uncommon. And it was one of the things that I know as you talked to Annette and me, as we talked about the data, who has access to the data, and what ways is it going to be used? You know, are we out there, you know, giving data to a black hole that's just going to go out and sell it to somebody? You know, do we have access to our own data? Can we do meaningful things with it? And like you said, it's very, very uncommon for the type of access and the complete access. You know, like, that's one of the things that attracted us to you guys, was just the openness of, like, I think one of the first questions we asked you was about the data and who has access to it. And you know, are you just out there retailing people's data? We didn't ask it to you in that way, but your answers were very much like open source, community, and being able to not just be locked into a singular thing. And like you said, sometimes people are, I call it data hoarding. It happens all over the place. And in organizations, it's poison. And in communities, it's poison to just hoard data and not be open and share. And that's, you know, completely contrary in a, especially in a rare disease space, that we don't have a lot of data. Some of our communities are not large. And if we're not making sure that that is open and available, we're going to miss opportunities, and we're going to slow our growth. And it's going to create challenges that people may or may not, you know, pick us versus one of those other 10,000, you know, rare diseases out there. And in some ways, you know, you don't like to think about it as a competition, but, you know, using your platform, using the data, having access to the data, I like to call it democratizing the data, right? And having that out there, that's like, you know, pushing on the accelerator pedal to get things done faster. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because that, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily think about something like that being important as you know, just in general, you know, who has access to it, and is it available, and can you figure out what's there? And you guys are unique. It's amazing that you guys have done that. And it was 100% a huge factor in why we said you guys were the partners that we needed.
Yeah. A lot of other groups have sad stories of, this is a team, like I said, team effort. And when your team has put so much effort into collecting the data, because it is a lot of work, it's like, this isn't easy. And then you give it all to this, you know, system or platform or institution. And then they say, you know, it's ours. You can't have it. You know, maybe you can see this piece of it. It's very disheartening. Or we're going out of business, and yeah, you can't have any of it. So yeah, it was very important to me to say you have 24/7 access to it anytime you want it, and that's the route we've been, and it's been successful. Everybody seems to, all of our groups, that's the model they want. So, yep.
You've cracked it there, and thanks for that openness, because sometimes people who, sometimes it's scary for organizations. I mean, like you said, they're not trying to be evil or whatever else, but, you know, sometimes it's scary if someone else has access to it, or if I can't control this thing, because it is a big investment. So, but anyway, yeah, it's the journey that you are on is an amazing journey, and I'm envious for, you know, what the future is for across healthcare and for the Matrix platform, and looking forward to, you know, continuing to partner with you guys And, you know, we're already seeing great things, but it's just going to accelerate.
Well, and similarly, on our side, we want to be the best partner we can to you and the KBG community. I mean, I've got the privilege of meeting you guys in person, your whole family. So, yep. That's the piece of me. I mean, this is personal for me to be able to help in any small way I can. So I'm here, always here. And I tell everybody till I die, this is what I'm called to do. So I'll be at it. And if I can help anybody, let me know.
Cool. Well, I'll wrap it up. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for the conversation. I always enjoy these things. You can tell. I get carried away a little sometimes, but I appreciate your time. And again, for those of you, Jason is the founder of Across Healthcare, and he's builder of the Matrix platform, which we use at KBG Foundation with our natural history study. We encourage anybody with KBG or a caregiver or someone with KBG to find the link to the study on the kbgfoundation.org site, main website. So it's there. Feel free to go explore it and work with the foundation and with Jason here. So again, thank you, Jason, for your time. Is there any parting shot or anything like that? I think
I gave it. You guys are doing amazing work. I know, like all of us, it's not going as fast as we would like it to, but I think we're on a good track. And yeah, I think it's teamwork and we're working together. So I'll leave it at that, but I definitely appreciate you. You're part of the equation and your energy that helps drive us at Across Healthcare.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, have a great day and thanks for doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take care.